session number 1042, Rule 28.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 28. We're still talking about Esquikelet, Colonel.
Yes, yes. By now, the weather was getting very bad, and I just want to read you a little extract, very short extract, from my diary at the time. 4th of January, it was a Sunday, snowed all last night. Yesterday, the water truck of the company with others got bogged and snowed up at Erbil and spent the night out. Today we were waterless in the morning, but managed to get 9 gallons from A Company for tea for breakfast, although it was not going until well after the fried eggs and sausages. Yesterday, washed, stripped to the waist in the snowstorm. I managed to require a small drop of water to wash in, but had to melt my sponge and loofah in the cookhouse, and I shaved in heated snow. There were no other means. Now, that was on the 4th of January, and the next day I wrote, life is really most unpleasant, but I suppose one must not grumble. This morning there were 7 degrees of frost when we got up. Dando had taken the chill off the washing water, but it was very cold and it almost froze on my back. During the day of the thawed and the camp has been a sea of mud. Thus, dry feet have been out of the question. And on the 7th of January, I wrote, just put my pen into the inkpot and found it frozen solid, now thawing it out over the charcoal fire. So that gives you an idea of what life was really like in the camp at Esquikelet during the first 10 days in January. We were told that the snow had not been like it before for at least 25 years, but what the inhabitants and the shepherds and the camel drivers suffered bears not thinking about, because, as I say, they only had sandals on their feet and they had to squelch through that mud, and what the camels themselves suffered must have been too awful for words. Anyhow, during that time, the day, I did go down to my happy hunting ground with my new acquired gun, and I shot a pigeon, a woodcock, and a plover for the mess to supplement our rations. And then on another day, I went down and shot a couple of pigeons and a sand grouse to supplement our little officer's mess. The day the ink froze, there were 13 degrees at 7:30 in the morning. And during the night, there'd been 19. Cleanliness, of course, was awfully difficult to keep everything clean. The men's rifle and that sort of thing in their tents, which were at the entrance of which was probably a quagmire. I know I had to preside at a court of inquiry for 2 cracked cylinder heads in it all. It was, everything was iced up. Well, then about the 10th of January, it started to thaw, and rumours prevailed that we were to move to Lebanon and Syria, and the advance party was in fact warned. And as the weather improved, We did little platoon exercises down towards the village downstream called Zaglav. It was an Arab village, and we at first were complete strangers. And on the first occasion, the head man ordered a small boy to bring me 3 melons, and I gave him some bakshish, and thereafter we became great friends in the village. Incidentally, the head man, I think it must have been, he asked me in for a drink, but I was never able to go in. But he had a superb Arab horse, and I thought I knew a bit about horses, having kept them, and it had his legs as clean as a whistle. It really was a superb animal. We used to go down there and do these little exercises with live ammunition, and each platoon went through these exercises. When the weather improved, I used to still continue my walks, of course, up my happy hunting ground. Again saw on one occasion 3 pig, but I only had a shotgun, and that's no good. On one of the platoon exercises, I put the various sentries well out so that they'd keep any Kurds or Iraqis, they would be there, out of the way, out of the danger zone when we were firing. And one of my sentries came back afterwards and said to me, "By sir, I saw a lovely gazelle only 30 yards away." Well, I said, "Why didn't you shoot it for rations?" And, he said, "I wouldn't dare to do that, sir. When they checked my ammunition when I got back and found one bullet missing, there'd be awful trouble." You know, it sort of stifled ingenuity in a way, because it wouldn't matter. It was all surplus ammunition. That was one of the sort of exercises we did, more or less after we'd finished our digging and wiring. And we did another exercise subsequently, and it worked extremely well. We put 3 vehicles and 10 men in a little hollow, a little saucer-like hollow in the ground, and then after dark, set each platoon to try and raid them in the dark. And the chaps absolutely adored it. They thought it a splendid operation, particularly when one platoon never found them. And not even at 10:30 at night could they find these 3 vehicles. In fact, the 3 vehicles thought, "Oh, what to hell with this? Let's bugger off." And they drove away and came home. And I think it was Claude Boyston's platoon was still looking for them, but just caught them as they were driving away. The chaps talked about it, which obviously interested in them. Each platoon did this once over a period of days. Then to go back again to my hunting day time, round about the middle of January, 15th I think it was, I went down to try for a pig, and I took Claude Boystones with me, and my company sergeant Major Paris, who poor chap was killed in Sicily, but he was a very, very good shot, and we waited at dusk to see if we could get any of the pigs came to a water hole, but they didn't. We could hear them grunting about, but it was rather lovely as dusk set in, and it got that sort of lovely light as the sun goes down, thousands and thousands of starlings came into roost. Here they'd go into a wood, there they landed on the and rested and roosted in the brambles all down by the river. And extraordinarily nice light when the sun goes down, and then the herons started to croak, make a queer croaking noise, and the owls started up. But we never got a pig, and we came back listening to jackals howling down in the riverbed, looking for a meal. But nevertheless, 18 on the 18th of January, I went out for the whole day, and I took again my Cumnisarm major and my good driver Parkinson, who incidentally still lives in the town, I think Sergeant Houston came with me, and my baton, Dando, and we stalked a gazelle, and I said to Sergeant Major Palace, "Now, if I miss, you fire." But he was so enthusiastic that he couldn't resist, and he shot the gazelle in the neck, and I shot it just behind the heart, and we brought it back and ate it, and its head, I think I've already mentioned on there, its head is now in my gun room. Rather a good head. About the next day, the police, chief of police of Mosul College, called at battalion headquarters and called to see me and offered his help if we wanted any help whilst we were staying there. I went for one more day towards the end of the month with the Cumnisarm Major and Tommy Gibson, and tried to get another gazelle, but failed. There was a bird there in that which was very common, called a great bustard. They used to inhabit this England and the Salisbury Plain and in Norfolk. But they're very like, in some respects, a turkey, are sometimes called turkey bustards. They were very, very wary. We used to try and stalk these, because they made a very good meal, and they were very good to eat. And there were lots of them up there, but they were extraordinarily wary. You couldn't shoot them with a shotgun. You'd have to use a rifle, because you couldn't get near enough to them. I went on one afternoon, I remember, around about the 26th of January, to see if I could get one, but with no luck. On the 27th of January, I see from my diary, I heard of Jock Hastert's death, suicide, at the depot. It was due to family troubles, and of course he worried so over it, over everything. At the end of that month, almost the last day, I think, our new brigadier arrived, who turned out to be Crasher Nichols, who'd done very well in Eritrea. I think he got the DSM bar, and of course he was subsequently our brigadier, and then became our divisional commander up in the Western Desert. And it was he, or it was Monty when he came here, who asked me who was my divisional commander in the Western Desert. Monty came here to inspect some troops in the Bird Museum, or present some colours in the Bird Museum, and he came to the house to put on his uniform. He asked me who our divisional commander was, and I said Crasher Nichols, and he said, "Oh yes, we thought he'd reached his ceiling, so we had to get rid of him." But he came to us as brigadier the last day of January in 1941. Brigadier Redden had already left, and Colonel Beard of the 8th Battalion had been acting as brigadier temporarily, and he too, very shortly afterwards, left to get a brigade somewhere in the in Eritrea or something, not Eritrea, somewhere down in Africa. Anyhow, we were told at the last day of January that we would definitely move to Syria into proper billets and feed off tables. And I had my last outing with Parkinson and Gibson. By them, it was getting milder, much milder, and you could wear shorts with a battle dress top, which I found absolutely splendid. Well, anyhow, this day Parkinson and Gibson and I went out. We went southwards down the river and to see if we could get a pig of some sort. And a smaller river came into the Great Cheb called the Kazir, and we went down there. And we suddenly saw an old tusker, a frightfully old pig with long tusks, being chased by a couple of dogs. And they couldn't catch it. It was going too fast for them. But they could turn it. And I took a shot at it. Parkinson drove like a veritable Jehu, and I took a shot at it, missed it, but then the second shot I had, I did hit it, but it made no impression on it at all. And we got into the scrub by the Zahia, I think it was, the river, and see if we could trace it with any drops of blood. There were a few tiny drops of blood, and then they petered out, and we thought, well, it's too dangerous to go on trying to hunt for this animal. But it was a frightful old tusker. It made a jolly good meal if we got it back. And I tried to get some bustard, and I tried to get some gazelle. We saw them, but it was no... it was no, really no... no success at all. On the 2nd of February, we had a final route march, and I remember we went to the village of Zagdan, which was, as I say, down the river, and there were a whole lot of horse copers there with all sorts of shades of horses, and some fit and some dead, all lying about the place. You've never... you can't imagine what it was like, but there were some rather nice ones, animals amongst them. While we are here now, it's rather interesting to note the run of conversation that went on in our little tent and our headquarters. I made a note of it, and it's a note in round about almost the last day we were there. I wrote as follows. It's rather interesting to note the run of conversation during a day in our little mess. Breakfast. Did you hear that camel making that frightful noise last night? Yes, from Claude Boystones. I went out to see what was going on and turn out the guard at the same time, but it was in the 149th Field Ambulance, so I did not bother. To me, standing outside the tent, surveying the camp with a paper under my arm, is that this morning's Times? If so, may I have a look at it? At lunch, it was merely a general conversation on the exercise and current affairs. During the dinner, there were many subjects. Shakespeare, Golden Treasury, and Tim, having recited the poem by Clough, referred to by Winston Churchill in a speech, how slowly, but look to the west, the land is bright. And then Claude Boystone recited, I stood at the gate, and quoted by as quoted by His Majesty. Afterwards, the subject turned to silver and its hallmarks, and drifting on to poor Bob Little. Now, Bob Little was the son of one of the Lord Ravensworths at Ravensworth Park, outside Gateshead. And the family was known to Claude Boystone, because he's a Newcastle chap, known well, and was very well known to me, because he used to come and stay here in my parents' time and in my time with my wife. He was slightly mental. He was in the same house as me, but older, of course, for me at Charterhouse. And he desperately wanted to get into the 6th D&I under Father. And he never, they wouldn't, he wasn't fit enough. And so Claude Boystone and I were obviously turned to poor Bob Little and most of the Ravensworth family. And so that was the sort of little conversations we had in our mess. And of course, Claude Boystone, I have dealings with to this day. He's a partner in Wise Speak & Co., stockbrokers in Newcastle, and he and I are co-trustees of a family trust. But he was very slow, and still is, rather grey, but awfully nice. And he, you could buy fox skins in Mosul, and I bought a fox skin to send to my small niece, but we weren't allowed to, they weren't allowed to enter the country. But Claude, who looked rather effeminate, was wearing one round his neck in his uniform, and the CEO saw him and said, "Claude, get that bloody thing off your neck." But he was rather like that, and I always liked him. Anyhow, on the 6th of February, we left at 6 o'clock in the morning for Kirkuk. And it was a farewell to the Kurds, and I had a farewell glance up the Great Zab River, and looking slightly disconsolate to the pig scrub and the duck pools. Then we went on to Erbil, which was really magnificent sight in the first light of dawn. And we had to march to the last two-thirds of the battalion had to march the last 5 miles to Kirkuk. And the remaining third went on and put up the tents and got the camp ready, and was, it was very welcome to those that were marching. And we did that most of the way back. Now, we were being relieved by an Indian brigade. And whilst we were at Eskakelik, the brigadier, who happened to be my first cousin, we always thought slightly superior. He was far older than me, and in our childhood looked down on us as very small youths, had come into the brigade camp at Eskakelik and said, "Was his cousin in the Durham Light Infantry here?" And the staff captain, Harry Sill, had said, "Yes, he's across the road." And he'd gone across the road to our camp to see if I was there. But I was out. And he'd then left a message that when we got to Kirkuk on the return journey, would I go into his mess at Kirkuk and see him? And when we did get to Kirkuk, I went and had dinner with him there. It was really rather extraordinary. Extraordinary meeting one's cousin. He was the brigadier. He was in the Sikhs, and I suppose he had two Indian battalions and one English, and they were going to take over up there. I never saw him again. I think I saw him after the war, possibly. As I say, he's now dead, but he I know left Sandhurst in 1914. so you can see he was much older than me. And here he was, commanding a brigade, and I went and had dinner with him at Kirkuk. Well, then the next day we went on through Tutskamatli and over the Tork Bridge, and we saw on the way there, on this second day of the trip, a very magnificent sight of a Sheikh Hawking with his two sons and two lovely Salukis. He mounted, of course, on horseback, and he had the hawk on their sleeves as they were riding along. It was really rather a fine sight. And then we got to Diltar. Then the next day we passed through Baghdad to Habaniya, the aerodrome. On this occasion, we were encamped on some high ground between the aerodrome on one side, and on the other side was the this tremendous lake that is there. It's 10 miles round, and it provided, when we were there, a seaplane base. And incidentally, when at the aerodrome, there were a whole lot of planes, Bombay bombers and that sort of thing, going, making their way to the far, far east. But anyhow, I went into the officer's mess at the aerodrome, and it seemed so dull somehow or other. There was a lovely drawing room, dancing room, and there was all the facilities of peacetime, and there were no women folk there, and it was all very dead, and there were some pre-war notices on the notice board. However, there was one notice which was really surprising, in view of the fact that Habaniya had been right in the front line with the Rashid Ali's invasion, and the King's Own had been there, and the Air Force had flown off the aerodrome and dropped bombs on Rashid Ali's troops. But there was one notice on the board, a fixture card of the Royal Exodus Hunt, which brought to back shades of Wellington in the Peninsula. And they'd had a lawn meet the Saturday before we arrived. They hunted jackals. I think that they were, in fact, within a stone's throw of the